right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, May 6, 2015. And this says before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV. It is 66 degrees and partly sunny here today in upstate New York. It's actually a beautiful day outside. I'm feeling a little bit under the weather. Woke up feeling like I was hit by a truck, so I'm hoping I'm not coming down with the plague that was floating around here at the end of last week. I don't know. I guess we'll see. I am just coming out of my cloudiness from sleeping. It was rough getting up this morning. You know that hit by a truck feeling where, like, you're all achy? I mean, especially, like, my shoulders and everything. I'm just still feeling like I'm half asleep. So, I don't know. We'll make the best of it today. See how it goes. Let's just cross our fingers that I'm not getting sick because I just don't like being sick. It's like the absolute worst, especially when it's nice out. I know there's all kinds of stuff that came out yesterday. Trying to think of where we left off. I did the story about the National Guard. That's where we kind of kicked it off yesterday, the National Guard with euthanizing the turkeys, which I got to tell you, even in any of the mainstream reports that I have read over the last few days talking about the bird flu, and there actually was another story, and I'm telling you, I think people are thinking when I'm bringing this up, because I know I even thought when I first saw this that they're talking about, like, you know, ho-hum, the bird quote-unquote flu outbreak from a couple years ago that nobody wanted to get vaccinations for, except that this is something completely new, completely different, biggest outbreak ever on, and an NPR story came out yesterday, biggest outbreak ever on U.S. soil. Ding, ding, ding. Right? Keywords. And it's spreading. And they actually had Tom Vilsack on the PBS NewsHour yesterday, asking him how this is going to affect the food prices, and he doesn't seem to think necessarily right now that it might. Maybe eggs, we'll have to wait and see, but, you know, I don't know. I think people should really be paying attention to this. I mean, it very well may likely be that this is some sort of orchestrated event. I don't know. I just think all these diseases popping out of closets and saying boo all of a sudden seems very suspicious to me. And it wasn't like this just 2-3 years ago, was it? We didn't have all this crazy stuff popping up. I mean, who even thought about it? But interestingly enough, back just a few years ago with the CERT team and FEMA funding, they did all kinds of training across America on how to deal with pandemics. So that's what makes me smell this like dead fish. Actually, let's see if we got that PBS. Yeah, actually, worst U.S. bird flu outbreak threatens Midwest poultry industry. Let's hear that, because I caught that last night, and actually halfway through the interview, the sound was gone, and it seems that when the video was ripped, it had some bad audio, so there was a new upload that went up, so now it's all up there. Hold on, I'm kind of cloudy. Anyway, while it plays, I can have some more coffee, because I've only had like a couple sips, and see if I can shake this haze. All right, let's see. I know even my Skype is acting up this morning. Hey, it connected. All right, so this is PBS NewsHour. Worst U.S. flu outbreak ever in the United States threatens the Midwestern poultry industry.
The growing outbreak of bird flu is now the largest ever seen in this country. More than 21 million birds, including 3 million turkeys in Minnesota, have been killed or are set to be euthanized.
I'm going to stop. So we went from 16 just 2 days ago. God, I hate that echo. To 20. I really think that it just echoes to annoy me. It went from 16 million just a few days ago now to 21 million. And it could very well get bigger. That should be very disturbing to us, especially when they're already saying now that there may not be turkeys. And didn't we say this too? And I was kind of just tossing it out there as, oh, well. But I've seen two stories now where they said there actually may not be any turkeys for Thanksgiving or Christmas this year, which, you know, they load them up with the antibiotics and whatever, so we probably shouldn't be eating any factory farmed anything. But it's just the point. It's the point of this this orchestrated scarcity that's happening. And you know that those money grubbers on Wall Street are all playing with derivatives, right? Didn't we learn all about that? How whether it's going up or it's going down, they're making money. And if they bet against it, like when we were having droughts and floods and all the crop losses back a couple years ago, they were all making money on Wall Street because they were betting the crops would fail. Or they were putting whatever that insurance is that they can put on it. I don't know. I'm not a stockbroker. We should ask Kevin Blanch. But there's a way for them. I actually watched a couple documentaries the one time about Wall Street. And, I mean, there is a way, no matter what, with these derivatives, that they can bet on it going up or going down, and they can cash in either way. So it doesn't matter to them. And as this scarcity, and, you know, we used to call it price fixing or whatever when they'd make artificial scarcities, right? Mess with the supply and demand. Like, you know, OPEC with their oil. Well, we're not going to produce anymore. And all of a sudden there's a shortage. So we can hike the prices up. And this I really think is going to be a real shortage. But the means for which the shortage came about, I don't necessarily think were natural causes. You know, some Chinese aircraft flew over and dropped some infected geese over the farms. I don't know. You know, Plum Island isn't too far away. Whoopsie. Look, we dropped a vial behind Bessie's barn. Who knows? But to me, just outbreak after outbreak after outbreak. And I mean, this is just over the last couple years when all of a sudden the buzzwords are beep, beep, beep. It's global warming. Beep, beep, beep. We need vaccinations. Beep, beep. You know, whatever. All right, let's listen to the rest of this. You guys all know that. Any of my listeners already know that. All right, here we go.
State of emergency has been declared in three states, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. But the virus has also surfaced in 11 other states, and farmers are increasingly worried.
I want to stop one more time. Sorry, I know I hate when I do this too. It's annoying. But what I wanted to point out of all the clips that I've watched about this bird flu, and there's been a bunch now, not one clip has mentioned that National Guard story up in Minnesota to euthanize the turkeys that we talked about yesterday. And that actually came from the local news in Minnesota, whatever that county was, some weird county I couldn't say. That was a local news story. And wouldn't you think, like, calling out, I mean, the fact that even the National Guard was surprised in that story that they were being called out to euthanize turkeys using some horrifying, suffocating foam. I mean, it was just awful, absolutely awful. But don't you think that as a part of the worst bird flu outbreak ever in the United States, with 21 million chickens and turkeys euthanized or yet to be euthanized, don't you think PBS, you know, they make themselves out to be so pseudo-intellectual and tell the whole story and tell the truth. Don't you think that would have been like a big deal to add to the story? That, and even we have three states that declared a state of emergency and it spread to 11 other states. And even Minnesota had to call out the National Guard to euthanize 3 million turkeys. Right? You'd think that never even mentioned. I have not heard it mentioned in anything. So, all right, except for that local news story, like I said. All right, let's back this up just a little bit so we can get her without my interruptions.
Wisconsin, but the virus has also surfaced in 11 other states, and farmers are increasingly worried. The federal government today agreed to add another $330 million to the $84 million in emergency funds it has already set aside to help cover farmer claims. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack joins us now. Secretary Vilsack, you're a proud son of Iowa. How would you total up the economic impact so far?
Well, Gwen, I think you need to put this into proper perspective. It's certainly devastating to every individual farmer who's experiencing this, but this represents about 1/3 of 1% of all the chickens and turkeys in the country today. So it's devastating for the individual farmer, and we are there to help and work with that farmer to get through a very tough time. The impact on chicken and turkey prices is at this point unknown. It potentially could not have any impact at all, given the small number that we're dealing with relative to the overall number of chickens, turkeys in the country. It may have an impact on eggs. We'll just have to see.
The federal government is devoting just north of $400 million to alleviate this. What kind of dent can that make?
Well, we're not sure that all $400 million will necessarily be used. It's at this point in time, the sort of the outward bound number that we're working on. As of today, we're looking at approximately $84 million of indemnification costs. This includes paying farmers for the fair market value of the chickens and turkeys that have to be depopulated, as well as the cleanup costs, which can sometimes be quite extensive in order to ensure that facilities are properly sanitized.
I want to stop for a second. I let it go long enough without interrupting. If anyone remembers back in 2008, and I do, when Vilsack was tapped to be the head of whatever the hell he is. Is he the USDA dude now? Yeah, I think he is. he had been formerly the Iowa governor, right? And everyone's like, oh, look at all these great things. If you go to Wikipedia, you see all these great things that he did for the state of Iowa. He, you know, was born in poor Pennsylvania and was given up to an orphanage. And then he, you know, I was reading this whole life story yesterday. He was adopted by some great parents who then sent him to law school. He actually went to Albany Law School here in New York and did all these great things. And he's got these great kids who are both lawyers and blah, 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 blah. But I remember one of the big things that people were against when he was nominated for the position was the fact that being in Iowa, being the governor of Iowa, which is one of the largest agricultural states of the United States, Tom Vilsack had been very, very, very in bed with the agricultural companies, the big boys, right? And so just like having Michael Taylor is the head of the FDA, the former Monsanto attorney that we actually looked at yesterday. We've talked about him quite a number of times in the past. Tom Vilsack is the head of the USDA is no better, and maybe even worse, because here's something else that I dug up, and you'll hear him, because this is what I'm thinking why this stinks to high heaven. Listen to this. Six reasons. This is out of the Organic Consumers www.organicconsumers.org, the Organic Consumers Association. Six reasons why Obama appointing Monsanto's buddy, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack, for the USDA head would be a terrible idea. They had actually started a petition back in November of 2008 to take action to stop Vilsack's confirmation. It says I gotta kill the Skype. I just can't stand this feedback that just appeared all by itself one day after an update. number one, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack's support of genetically engineered pharmaceutical crops, especially pharmaceutical corn. Now, that's something that we should look at, because I wonder if that is anything like Nestle trying to nutritionally correct all your ills through food. By the way, that webinar that we signed up for yesterday, there were a few of us in chat that signed up for it to see about Nestle's new projects with using the microbiome and food for health. But it seems it has now been postponed. And the email said, quote unquote, due to unforeseen circumstances. So who knows? Maybe they got too many creeps like us signing up. But it's been postponed till June now. But anyway, all right, number one, former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack's support of genetically engineered pharmaceutical crops, especially pharmaceutical corn. Number two, the biggest biotechnology industry group, the Biotechnology Organization, industry organization, named Vilsack Governor of the Year. He was also the founder and the former chair of the Governor's Biotechnology Partnership. Ding, ding, ding. Number three, when Vilsack created the Iowa Values Fund, his first poster child of economic development potential was Transova and their pursuit of cloning dairy cows. Ding, ding, ding. Number four, Vilsack was the origin of the seed preemption bill in 2005. which many people here in Iowa fought because it took away the local government's possibility of ever having a regulation on seeds where genetically engineered crops would be grown, having genetically engineered free buffers, banning pharmacorn and locally, et cetera. Representative Sandy Griner, the Republican sponsor of the bill, bragged on the House floor that Vilsack put her up to it right after his State of the State address. So he was really pushing for GE crops in his state. I mean, this is just so dirty. Vilsack has a growing reputation as being a shill for agribusiness biotechs like Monsanto. Sustainable ag advocates across the country are spreading the word. Advocated across the country were spreading the word of Vilsack's history as he was attempting to appeal to voters in his presidential bid. And I forgot about that one. And number six, Vilsack is an ardent supporter of corn and soybean-based biofuels, which use as much or more fossil energy to produce them as they generate while driving up world food prices and literally starving the poor. And that's one of the things that we've been talking about. I mean, especially even if it's GMO corn. But, I mean, in the face of famine, while it makes lots of sense to be growing corn for fuel than rather for food, right, especially as they're culling cows in the West. I mean, that happened a couple years ago. So anyway, just know Tom Vilsack is not a friend of you or me. And what I really raise an eyebrow at is this was just in 2008 before he became head of the FDA and target of millions, if not billions of dollars of lobbying money by the large agribusiness and biopharmaceutical companies. I mean, a lot's happened since 2008, guys. I mean, let's think about it. That's almost... that is 7 years ago. Look at everything that's happened in biotechnology since then. Pharmaceuticals, RNAi. I mean, it's pretty scary. Anything goes now. No labeling. They have it all in their pocket. So, all right, let me find where the hell I had that video open. Here we are. So, all right, let's listen to the rest of this video now.
Where did this come from?
Most likely from Asia, from wild ducks and geese that develop AI and resistance to it, which ultimately in commercial sized operations and even in free range chickens that are commercial, they don't have that resistance. And so it's fatal for them, but not fatal for the wild birds that are spreading it throughout the U.S.
The last time we talked about bird flu, it was an age here from species to species?
There's no indication of that. There's no indication of any human situation or human illness link at this point. This is, at this point in time, unfortunately, focused on those individual farmers who are suffering through a tough time. And we're encouraging the farmers who have not yet been hit by this.
Yes, and basically what they just said, she's like, has it spread to people yet? Well, not, you know, unfortunately, no, we're focusing on the farmers, not at this time. No, because it hasn't percolated enough yet. You know what? That's the ace up Vilsack's sleeve for if all these other things don't work that they're pushing, hey, man, we got bird flu in what? He said 11 states, plus there were three more in state of emergency. So that's now 14 states. In the beginning, we saw 12. That would be a beautiful ace of spades to push this vaccination agenda.
Take appropriate biosecurity approaches and controls in their operation to try to mitigate and potentially avoid this happening on their farms.
Well, what?
And one other thing, biosecurity, right? Isn't that something that we've been hearing a lot of lately? Not probably in the last week, but the week before when we were going through clips, I must have heard the term biosecurity like five times. Bing, 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 bing. Biosecurity means for the security of the nation, for the security of the food, for the security of yours and my health, Department of Homeland Security, federal government, all needs to get involved to ensure that you and me are safe. That's what biosecurity means.
What are you telling them to do? What actually can stop this from spreading?
Well, there are a couple of things potentially. Time is probably the key at this point. As the weather gets a bit warmer, the virus will potentially be killed by it. Birds ultimately over time will develop a resistance. And the USDA at our poultry lab in Georgia is currently working on a vaccine. And I know that there are some enterprise private sector labs that are also working on a vaccine.
Ding. So we're working on a vaccine. We've had 1621, say what it was, went up to. It was 16 first, 21 million already euthanized. Vaccinations are coming, so don't you worry, because all my friends in biopharma are planning on making bazillions, and you better believe Mr. Tommy Vilsack probably bought some stock options.
Now, in Minnesota especially, the chickens who've been involved have been, as I understand it, of the egg-laying population. Does that there is there any reason that humans who are consuming eggs should be at all concerned about that?
No, it's just not – that's not the issue here. The issue is, unfortunately, primarily agriculture. It's not human health at this point in time. And that's why we have been focusing at USDA on making sure that producers do what they can to protect their interest in, to make sure that we're there to help them if, in fact, this unfortunate situation occurs on their farm.
And one final question about the turkeys, which are involved. Is this something that's going to affect turkey suppliers, turkey consumers, come turkey eating time this fall?
You know, Gwen, it's unlikely, and for this reason. Unfortunately, a number of countries have decided to ban all poultry and turkey sales to their country exports from the U.S., which is unfortunate. We think a more appropriate way is to regionalize those bans, which means our export numbers are going to be down, which means that domestic supply actually could be up. So consumers might actually see more supply, not less supply, of turkey and chicken.
Oh, no. So think about this. First of all, again, now we got the head of the USDA. We got PBS NewsHour. I mean, they're pretty well known. It's quite a global news organization. They literally now are talking about the turkeys and the effect on the turkeys, and they still don't mention the National Guard having to euthanize. And you would think deploying armed services on U.S. soil to go cull poultry would at least make a sentence in a story, but it doesn't. But all these other countries now ban turkey imports from the United States over this. So did you hear what he's saying? That means that we actually might have a glut on our market, so we might not have a turkey-free Thanksgiving or Christmas. But think about this. He's so certain right now that there's no threat to people in the eggs or in the meat or anything like that. I mean, I don't know. It's a virus. But on the other hand, who knows what kind of virus it is? Who knows if this is a natural virus, if this is an orchestrated in the lab virus from one of his friends? Just remember that he said they're working on a vaccine. And wow, wouldn't that be freaky if we find out after we eat all this shit that it makes you sick and you get the flu? You know, that could always happen. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. I don't like this at all. And the poisoning of our food supply is probably the one thing that we need to really pay attention to now, because it's happening from so many different fronts covertly, just from the nanotech and all the other crap they're putting in there. Actually, I saw Heather Callaghan. I've been trying to like throw the flag up for a long time and say, Heather, you got to see some of this crazy shit that's going on. And I see now Heather has actually done some excellent stories on the technology. There was one just the other day where she was looking at nano in food, that if I can find it quick, we might look at that. And just some of the crazy shit. I mean, it's happening. And there are no labeling laws. Remember that. GMO, nanotech, there's no central agency that is doing any research. Every company has their own R&D lab, and it's all deemed safe. We're going to go back and actually finish that story that we started yesterday about the genetically engineered apples and potatoes, because they talked a lot about that. And that's where we actually got down to Michael Taylor and the rubber stamping of all the FDA saying an apple is an apple is an apple, regardless if it has single or double-stranded RNA in it. And that's bullshit. That scientist out of New Zealand says that's absolute bullshit. So, all right, last 30 seconds here, this Tom Vilsack.
We're still uncertain in terms of the impact on eggs. We about 100 billion eggs a year are produced. Iowa, obviously being the number one egg producer, represents roughly 9% of overall egg production. So we're still looking at relatively small percentages of the overall food supply.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, thanks so much.
You bet.
You know, and the thing is like he's saying that there's no threat from eating any of this to us. But I'm going to tell you something. If there's anything that we've learned in studying RNA, DNA, and glyphosate, microbiome, all this different stuff, it even dog spit, right? All this different stuff. You can pass, and I had a great story actually the other day that was looking, and I think even that Apple one looked at just partial strands of RNA that were put into the food, and they were able to be passed down via generations. Generations. So if we have fragments of this bird flu that gets potentially passed into the eggs, and we know that it's possible because of Dr. Huber talking about some of the research that he's done with just the GMO crops, the horses and the cows eating the GMO alfalfa, and they've been finding it in the placental tissue and in the offspring. We know that it passes the blood barrier, the blood-brain barrier. It gets into our circulatory system. We know this shit travels a lot farther than they potentially thought. And if GMO crops, let's say, if some of the substances that they're putting into these GMO crops, let's say, are ending up in the placental tissue, then it really isn't that much of a stretch to think that some sort of virus or illness isn't going to be passing into the egg. Remember, the egg isn't food. The egg is offspring. We just happen to eat the offspring before it becomes offspring. I don't know. I'm actually pretty afraid of eating eggs right at the moment, thinking that they... I mean, what? Who knows? Who knows? And that's the scary part, because there really is no information on any of this that we can really trust. There's a story, too. Just before I came out here, I ran across. We're going to hit this one, too. Sorry, guys. I'm actually not feeling too hot at all. Flawed medical research may be ruining your health and your life is what this one is called. And we've been harping on this one for a while. There is a cancer eating at the core of medical research. You most likely heard of medical reports touting the effectiveness of a diet plan, a new drug, a supplement, or a medical procedure. Yeah, don't ever order anything off the TV that tells you this new and improved. You may have even decided... Sorry, there was an ad that came down. I had to click it. You'd even decided on a course of action based on these findings, only to find out later that they've been refuted by new studies. Strikingly, the odds are that studies that influenced your decision, and possibly the decision of your doctor as well, were wrong. Ding, ding, ding. Yes, we've talked about that. This is the FDA protecting your health. We are bombarded by medical research studies that don't stand the test of time and potentially cause serious negative health outcomes. Perhaps because of this, you become jaded about how the newest health findings. I don't wish to dissuade you from how you feel. In fact, this article will show you how untrustworthy medical research is and what you must do to protect yourself and your loved ones. And that's what kills me, is that they just keep coming out pointing to these studies every single time for this anti-vaxxer argument. Look at the studies. Look how perfect. Look, you people are stupid and crazy because, look, the studies show you're wrong. Don't believe anything. It says medical research is fraught with incompetence, careerism, and fraud. And in April 15, 2015, edition of Lancet, the UK's leading medical journal, Editor-in-Chief Richard Horton said, quote, "The case against science is straightforward. Much of the scientific literature, perhaps as much as half, may simply be untrue. Ominously went on to say, quote, science has taken a turn toward darkness, unquote. This is the editor-in-chief of Lancet saying this. Science has taken a turn toward darkness. How many times have we said that? Mad science gone mad. Science isn't bad. I have a friend who tells me that I'm just anti-science, anti-technology, anti-moving forward. And no, that's not the case. I've spent many years learning about this stuff because I find it interesting and I find it very exciting. But we have a dystopia in our future. This is not being moved forward by people with our best interest in mind, and that is the difference. So science has taken a turn toward darkness. I would have to agree. As early as 1996, voices were being raised about the scandal in medical research. Douglas G. Altman, head of the Medical Statistics Laboratory in the UK, asked the following question in the British Medical Journal, the BMJ. Quote, what should we think about researchers who use the wrong techniques, either willfully or in ignorance, use the right techniques wrongfully, misinterpret their results, report their results selectively, cite literature selectively, and draw unjust conclusions? Well, very nice. His answer, we should be appalled. And, you know, this was in 1996. Remember some of the things that we were hearing about yesterday is when they, and I mean, I've found this now multiple times. I have been able to trace the beginnings of all my health problems back to the early 90s. Two things happened. I discovered that that's when they first started experimenting with GMOs and food without any of our knowledge, number one. And number two, that's when I got my one and only free flu vaccine in college because they convinced me, living in a large complex with lots of people, that it would be in my best interest to get a flu shot. Two things that happened, and I've had 25 years of trying to recover from that. His answer, you should be appalled. Yet numerous studies of the medical literature have shown that all of the above phenomenon are common, and this is surely a scandal. Yeah, I wonder how long he kept his job. Opening your mouth about all lies doesn't help your employability. In 2005, Dr. John P. A. Ioannidis, currently a professor in disease prevention at Stanford University, published the most widely accessed article in the history of public library science entitled Why Most Published Research Findings Are False. Well, kudos to a professor at Stanford who actually would go out on a limb like that. I don't know. There's a link to it. I should probably check that out at some point later. It would be probably an interesting document to read. In the report, he stated, there is increasing concern that most current published research findings are false. Most. And that, quote, in modern research, false findings may be the majority or even the vast majority of published research claims. I mean, come on. And these are some pretty well-known, well-respected people in the community saying that the majority of the research is probably bullshit. So when we have all these smug liberal assholes, half the people that I've known at some point in my life are one of those smug lefty liberal assholes. And thank God I am no longer one of those, because I used to be. Know everything. Liberal, suck it up. Eat everything that they feed you and believe it, and then go just parrot what they say. I mean, seriously. I lost my train of thought. But thank God that I at least saw the light. And this is just unreal. And, oh, I know, over this whole, I mean, the people just parrot this shit and point to studies. There is no study that can be trusted any longer. And your doctor isn't infallible. That's what I don't get. Like, all these people, my mom, you know, she's having some issues again. She's had really bad arthritis for years. And they keep putting her on all these stupid medications. I'm like, you got to find some other way to deal with it. So, of course, what happens? They put her on some new arthritis medication last week. She calls me up. She thinks she has shingles. She's covered from head to toe in these painful spots. Doesn't she go to the doctor? They say, oh, it's an allergic reaction. And they send her home. Well, it's not getting any better. Stop taking the medication. I had her do a liver cleanse with some lemon and warm water. Then her leg all started to swell up, so she thinks she has a blood clot. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Don't listen to your doctor. Your doctor doesn't have any clue. And I mean, maybe listen, maybe take it as one of 10 pieces of advisement in your decision. But don't sit there and have someone tell you what the problem is. I've had so many arguments over the years with my doctor, with my own diagnoses over theirs. And you know what? I was always right. They weren't. No doctor, though I had a few doctors that were good. They became friends of mine, and they learned to work with me. We worked together. I would bring them research, and we'd dig into things. But I mean, how many people have had doctors like that? And I've had many who look at you like you're a stupid, stupid person, and how could you possibly, anything you find in the internet, and they roll their eyes, how could you possibly know or find any more information than they can? Well, I could guarantee you that I spend way more time researching than most primary care physicians, and especially if it's on my personal healthcare problems, who has a stake in that? You, Mr. Doctor, who's getting kickbacks from the pharmaceutical company for you to give me this pill or that to see, you know, whether or not it works or makes me shut up, or me, who wants to get healthy. Anyway, all right, don't get me on a rant here. I'm going to finish reading this story. So anyway, this dude, this professor out of Stanford, he says, in modern research, false findings may be the majority or even the vast majority of all published research claims. Ionis's research model indicated that up to 80% of non-randomized research studies, which is the most common kind of study, are wrong, along with 25% of randomized trials, which is the supposed gold standard of research. Incredulously, these studies are published in the top peer-reviewed medical journals. And we just saw back a few weeks ago, right, there were all those reports then about the FDA fraud, allowing all this shit to be published. And even when something comes out after the fact to show studies being false, they were never redacted. So the FDA is just perpetuating this absolute disaster in any type of real research. These numbers indicate that much of what our physicians prescribe us then is wrong. Our doctors are using research to inform their medical decisions. Decisions of like what drug to prescribe, what surgery to elect, and what health strategy to adopt. You know, here's the thing. Again, always be careful what you ask for. Just like looking at the whole police brutality issue, saying how much cops suck, and gee, we need to do something. Careful what you ask for, because RoboCop is right around the corner. In the same vein, as we're sitting here going, oh, look at how we can't trust anything anymore, and our doctors don't know what they're doing, and our scientists are lying to us. Don't forget Watson, IBM's Watson, whose first big job is to become the backbone to Obamacare and VA health, socialized medicine in the United States, is right around the corner. All right, these numbers indicate much of what our physicians prescribe us is wrong. our doctors use this research to make their informed medical decisions, what drugs to prescribe, what surgery to elect, and what health strategy to adopt. They are making crucial treatment decisions for depression, Alzheimer's, type 2 diabetes, cancer, obesity, etc., based on bad, incomplete, or hidden medical research. Remember Vioxx, hormone replacement therapy, antiarrhythmia drugs, high carbohydrate diets? The lives of hundreds of thousands of people were damaged or ended prematurely. And absolutely, guys, guinea pigs, that's what we're here for. I mean, I would even go as far to say that some of this research is probably fraudulent on purpose, right? To just get their stuff out there to see what's going to happen once it's been rubber stamped and the genie's been let out of the bottle. And now they have the real time guinea pigs that it doesn't cost them anything to get the research numbers. All right, what's wrong with medical research? I mean, do we really want to go in here? I know what's wrong with medical research. There's research bias, there's publication bias, and there's conflict of interest. And what can we do to protect ourselves? Well, I can tell you, don't believe anything that you're told. Do your own research. Given the distorted, corrupt, and unreliable state of much of the medical research, what can we do? Well, short of ignoring all the research altogether, there are ways that we can protect ourselves. In his book, Wrong, David Freeman lists some practical measures that we can take to evaluate the reliability of medical research. You can tell if a medical research study is probably wrong if, A, it's too simplistic, universal, or definitive. It touts a cure for cancer. Yeah. Line up for your nanobots, your self-replicating 3D nanofactories. If it touts a cure for cancer, obesity, and aging, and guess what? We've seen cancer. I just saw a cure for obesity yesterday. And of course, there are all kinds of studies going on how to reverse aging. Remember the immortality projects. B, it's supported by a single study, small studies or animal studies. One small study of mice proving a cure for dementia does not mean that a cure actually exists. More study is needed. C, it claims to be groundbreaking. The truth about heart disease has finally been discovered. D, it is being pushed by people or organizations that will benefit financially. Ding, 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 ding. E, it's geared toward preventing a recent trauma or occurrence from happening in the future. A quick fix to solve serious and complex problems. And F, I would add that the association does not prove causation, and that is a problem that people make in logic. Unless a study is a randomized control trial, it cannot prove that one thing causes another, such as red meat causes heart disease. And you know, that's very true, because what we're finding on a daily basis is that we know less and less about how the human body works every day as we discover more. The whole microbiome is something that they never even looked at, and it's massive. There are so many things that affect other things, and it's a cascade effect. It's a network. It's a biological network. And remember, one of the first laws of physics is for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And the way to stay healthy is to keep everything in balance. So as soon as things go out of balance is when you start to get illness. Now, I don't know. I'm running out of time as always. April actually posted a story yesterday that I don't know if I'm going to be able to get through the story, but I wanted to bring it up because it was very similar to the journey that I had for my health. And just like I came to the conclusion, they are finally maybe concluding these same things. This poor girl, she's 21, And out of the blue, she's become allergic to everything, like everything on the planet, all foods, everything. That's what happened to me. I mean, you would have these serious reactions. You couldn't do anything. You couldn't eat anything. And then I stopped being able to digest proteins and all kinds of crazy stuff. I had never had allergies in my life. And what they're really starting to think, and if you really dig deep into it, an allergic reaction, and then your allergies actually progress to autoimmune disease, which I had many conversations with my allergist about that, and he told me they had nothing to do with each other. And I was trying to point out to him how if you looked at the macro and you backed up, they were basically the same mechanism. Just one was for internal threats and one was for external. And now, isn't it interesting, 20 years later, we see that they're part of the same department. Immunology and allergy are part of the same group now. When you go to an allergist, he's an immunologist. But back in those days, they weren't. They were two separate groups that thought that they had nothing to do with each other. But as they're injecting us with these vaccinations that have these adjuvants and all these other crazy ingredients that are messing around with our immune systems. And now, right, we find out since the 90s, they've been putting shit in our food that we don't even know what it's going to do. And more studies that come out here about genetically modified ingredients in our food, we're finding out that they're causing, I mean, that bee study we read yesterday about just putting one RNA strand from a jellyfish into the bee food changed over 1,400 genetic changes after one feeding in the bee, some of which were critical to life. How is that affecting us? So I definitely 100% think that it is all connected beyond a shadow of a doubt to me. I mean, having lived it, this isn't like I'm sitting here just reading articles. I lived this, okay? I watched this progression happen to myself, and I was helpless because nobody knew what it was. Cancer, that was all they taught. I said it before, I must have been diagnosed with cancer at least 15 times, and I'm still here, and it apparently wasn't cancer. I even had to go to a cancer hospital for 3 years because my blood all got messed up. I had a hematologist, and it's just unbelievable. Till I took matters into my own hands, and then my hematologist is like, I was just ready to have to go for a bone biopsy, and they told me it was some crazy bone cancer or leukemia, and that was when the light went on, and I changed my diet. And I started doing green tea and ginger. I'm trying to think what the other thing was. Diatomaceous earth. And when I went for my next visit 6 months later, he's like, wow, your blood numbers are back to normal. How they keep doing what you're doing. It's the food. Anyway, let's read just a little bit of this. It is titled, What Is It Like to Be Allergic to Everything? For some, food allergies are simply an inconvenience, a health condition that means PB&Js are out of the question. But for Bryn Duncan, 21, they are constant and potentially fatal, a guessing game. Some days, she can eat small portions of mashed potatoes, for example. And on others, that same food would send her immune system into a life-threatening overdrive. Same goes for fruits, vegetables, milk, soy, nuts, as well as other triggers such as smoke, perfume, and the sun. And, you know, they actually, down in this story, they talk about one of the ways they've been able to control it, at least for now, is to control the histamine reaction. I was just having a conversation with my mother about histamine reactions yesterday with these drugs that they put her on. And that's your body reacting and causing this inflammation that, you know, that's the root of all disease is inflammation in our body. And when you're allergic to something, that's what happens. You swell and your body starts to produce histamines. Well, that's where antihistamines come in. Well, this girl now, they at least have things under control by having this, literally, they have an automatic intravenous Benadryl pump that pumps Benadryl into her system 24/7. Now, I can tell you that I probably lived 7 years on daily Benadryl. That was the only way that I could make it. I used to be covered in hives, sick. I couldn't digest. I was so tired. They thought I was dying. They didn't know what was wrong. And Benadryl saved me. But like, how insane is that? And it's our body saying, hell no, get this genetically engineered garbage that you people are injecting and feeding to us out of our bodies. I mean, shouldn't that be like the biggest telltale sign? And as these diseases go off the charts, and you know, they talk about the fat Americans. Well, you know where the fat Americans came from? I was actually thinking about this when I was sleeping last night. The fat Americans came from them putting like things like high fructose corn syrup, which not only is it devastating to our ability to properly process food, and especially the fact that most of the corn is GMO, but it's addictive. It causes you to get the pear shape. It's the American disease. It's the shit they're putting in our food. It says, anyway, this girl, Duncan, they're diagnosing her with a rare condition called mast cell disease or mast cell activation syndrome. Mast cells are there to protect us against parasites and other things that could attack our bodies, says Dr. Castell, associate director of the Mastocytosis Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital. They can also be active when patients are allergic to, say, peanuts. And although Duncan has a normal number of mast cells, hers are unusually active, releasing unnecessary amounts of inflammatory chemicals such as histamine and prostaglandins. And you know what? That's the one thing I really wish my immunologist would have looked at, some of the other things going on in my blood, because I do remember that one of the things they kept finding when they had me going to the cancer hospital was that there was a substance called IG something in my blood that was always elevated. And they kept telling me how weird that was, because typically the only time you ever see elevation in that is when you're having a serious allergic reaction. Anyway, says this mast disease can lead to a bevy of symptoms ranging from the uncomfortable itching, flushing, diarrhea, mental fogginess, to life-threatening anaphylaxis. This poor girl in her blog states, quote, mast cell disease causes me to be allergic to just about everything. I have so many severe food allergies that I rely on a feeding tube to provide me with the proper nutrition. Guys, this is very dubious. Because as more and more people start to come down with this syndrome where their bodies are reacting to these poisons that are being put into them, and we're finding now from real researchers that we could trust, Dr. Huber being one of them, that when we're ingesting this stuff, they're literally going in and changing our gut flora, changing our ability to absorb nutrients. And as this continues, we become sicker and more malnutritioned. Eventually, which leads to us, of course, dying if we don't figure it out. Or, here comes Nestle with their nutraceutical pharmaceutical food on the horizon to cure you. It's very disturbing. Anyway, we'll read one more paragraph here, and then I want to hit one more thing. It says, to be diagnosed, a patient must respond to medications that control mast cell activation, such as antihistamines. So I should dig into that mast cell activation, because I bet you that's what it all came down to. I've never heard of that before I read the story yesterday. To control mast cell activation, such as antihistamines and other conditions with similar symptoms, like Crohn's disease, which, yes, that would be the swelling intestines every time you ate something that felt like you had something stuck that wouldn't move for a week in your digestive tract. Duncan was diagnosed in 2012 after a grueling 7-year search for answers. See, I'm not alone. I should contact this girl. I would be very interested. And she is being treated with Benadryl, but not in the way that most of us take the drug. She requires a 24/7 Benadryl pump, giving her body a constant supply of the antihistamine and cutting the number of drugs she needs to take by half. But I'm going to tell you something we discovered about Benadryl. And this was in having long conversations with my dentist that I knew since I was a little kid. But he was actually an oral surgeon. So he went to surgeon school. He was pretty smart. He told me that Benadryl constricts, well, any antihistamine, let's put it this way, constricts the blood vessels. So it's not just the blood vessels in your nose to stop your nose from being sniffly and swollen. It's your blood vessels everywhere, including in your heart, in your lungs, and in your stomach and digestive system. And by constricting all those blood vessels, it actually prevents your body from properly absorbing nutrients. But hey, this girl is actually being fed on a tube, so she might not notice that since it's being directly pumped into her body. But I mean, how disturbing is that? Is that the way all of our kids are going to turn out? I don't even know what to say to that. So where do we end up here? I don't know. I got about 2 minutes left. Let's get to the very end of that story we started yesterday about the genetically modified apples and potatoes. There was an interview of that scientist out of New Zealand who was talking about the dangers of double-stranded RNA. Maybe I can play him for about 2 minutes. So hold on. Institute for Responsible Technology.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Smith from the Institute for Responsible Technology. The United States Department of Agriculture just approved a non-browning apple, nicknamed the Botox apple. It hides its age because even if it's sliced and left out for close to 3 weeks, it won't turn brown.
By the way, the USDA approved. That was good old Tommy Vilsack.
Similarly, a potato, engineered not to brown or bruise. Now, obviously, there's a concern that you may be tricked into eating a very old, possibly even rotten, apple or potato. But scientists around the world are concerned about something far more serious. The genes that produce the browning in the apple and the potato are silenced through something called double-stranded RNA. The engineers put in DNA into the apple's genome. It produces a double-stranded RNA, which then silences the gene that normally causes.
And there we go. And that's the RNAi technology. All right, guys, it is Wednesday. Make sure you stick around. We got the boys from New York.